Imagine you're at a high school graduation ceremony. A young person has been chosen to give the speech on behalf of the graduates. She appropriately thanks all those teachers, mentors, parents, and friends who have helped her and the other graduates make it to this point. But then she also wants to give some further encouragement to her fellow graduates. She says, "My fellow graduates, even though we have received all this support and love, all this help and encouragement, at the end of the day, we need to believe in ourselves. We need to believe that we can reach our dreams. We need to believe that we can be all that we want to be. There is no limit to what we can do if we believe in ourselves." It was an impressive speech, an emotional speech. People clapped, they cheered, there were tears. But did we believe what she said? Before I try to answer the question, let me take you to another place, a lecture hall. We're listening to a group of biological researchers discussing our genetic makeup as human beings. The consensus seems to be that even though we'd like to think we're free to determine much in our lives, the truth is we are bound and limited by our genetic and chemical makeup, our brain structure, and a whole host of other factors that make up our DNA. In other words, even before we're born, we are shaped and determined in our bodies, our minds, our emotions, even in terms of how we will cope with life as we grow, the decisions and choices we will be inclined to make, the directions in life we will pursue, even the mistakes we will make. We may want to think we're free, but we are more determined than we ever imagined. And we know this, don't we? Especially as we age, don't we? In that high school auditorium, there may have been a number of young people, and when you're young, the future, it feels totally open, or it should, you know, full of possibility. But there were older people there also, parents, grandparents. You know, as we age and live our lives, we live them within choices we have made, choices that have been made for us, circumstances and situations that have determined often our life directions, our genetic makeup, which predisposes us physically, mentally, even emotionally. As we discover all this, we realize we're not as free as we'd like to think we are. And I say all this because in our common way of thinking today as modern people, we are caught up in a contradiction. On the one hand, we worship freedom. We want to be free to do what we want, when we want, to be all that we want to be, to have the resources, mental, physical, and spiritual, to make our dreams a reality. But on the other hand, we are being told more and more by science in particular that we are predetermined in more ways than we ever imagined, that we are a product of our genes, and even with all the exercise, diet, vitamins, medicines, therapies, organic eating, mental exercise, and counseling, or many other things we do in life, we can change a lot of things, but there are other things, things often very vital for our well-being and quality of life, we can do little about. That's what we're told. And all this becomes a source of real anxiety in us, does it not? If we become aware of some of this, the narrowing of choices can create a lot of anxiety. Deep down, we can question ourselves. You know, young people may have all kinds of awesome dreams, and it's really important and great to have dreams. But there are a lot of doubts as well. There are a lot of pressures, self-induced, but also pressures placed on young people by society, just thinking about the levels of stress and even, sadly, suicide among young people in our more prosperous, developed societies. To believe the future success rests on our shoulders is a great burden to bear. What will happen if and when we fail? What will happen if and when mistakes made bear consequences, consequences that limit the choices we have left? What will happen when we make decisions to go in certain directions and then realize that other opportunities have been lost or cannot be regained? The truth is, we are more limited than we like to believe as human beings. But the truth is also that we have infinite potential as human beings, infinite potential, even if all the cards of life are stacked against us and we are hemmed in on all sides by our genetic predisposition, the circumstances of life and the mistakes of life too, there's still infinite potential. Okay, preacher, you've made quite a claim. You've challenged us to be honest, to be truthful. We know freedom, it's a wonderful thing, wonderful thought, but real life can be a brute, and the older we get, the more we feel a shrinking of possibilities for our lives. We're forced to accept life for what it is, as it is, all too often. But you are also claiming that there's infinite potential in us even till we take our final breath. Potential to do things and change things. Is this true, or is this pie in the sky by and by? Let's consider our gospel reading for guidance. What we will find, is that Jesus contradicts both ends of our modern spectrum of opinion and discovery, both ends. We can't just do it all ourselves, and to assume our childhood dreams will be our lifetime reality, just to live that way without anything else, it's a recipe for defeat. But on the other hand, to assume too much is determined in our future is also a recipe for defeat. What we need is to cultivate a special kind of freedom based on a special kind of wisdom, a gospel wisdom. To discover such wisdom, let's ponder our gospel story. Jesus' time is a time before modern science and medicine. The limitations of life, they bump up against people all the time. But just because we have to live with limitations, sometimes severe limitations, does that mean we have to be stuck? Is it not true that some of the most awesome experiences and lessons in life have come to us because we have had to face the unexpected and at times overwhelming limitations? The infinite potential of life can only be discovered when we are faced with obstacles and challenges. Even though we're born with such potential, it's something we only discover if the right experiences are given us and we learn and grow through them. Only then. There are two main characters in our gospel reading. First, there's a father. We're told that he's a leader of a synagogue. That tells us he's not only a religious leader, but a leader of his community, a man of resources and means. But he has come face to face with his limitations in a tragic way. His precious girl is dying, and he can't do anything about it. But is this true? Is it true he can't do anything? He comes to Jesus publicly. And to do this, to come to Jesus publicly, involves great risk and possible humiliation. Jesus is being criticized by the religious and well-to-do of the community. Jesus is a peasant. He's got no formal education. He is very critical of the established ways of doing things. That's this man and all his friends. He's very critical, Jesus is. And to ask Jesus for help then is to have to kind of put his tail between his legs and to do this publicly and against his friends. But then there's his little girl. He'll do anything, anything to help her, whatever it takes, whatever he's got to give up. And this is what drives him forward. He takes the initiative to come to Jesus. It's a choice he makes, and he does this publicly. And what does Jesus ask of him? He asks for faith. Do you believe I can help your daughter? You know, healing is not some magic pill. It involves the healer and the healed. In this case, it's about a father having faith on behalf of his daughter. Even though it may seem he can do nothing for her, there is something he can do. He can have faith and follow through on his faith. But what is his faith based on? That's the question. What is his faith based on? Before we get to that, there's a second person in this story. And she intrudes onto this scene. A woman who has been suffering from a constant flow of menstrual bleeding for years, 12 years. The girl is 12 years old. This tells us that the two stories are connected. It's a little device. She's been suffering for 12 years as well. In her society, this is not just a medical problem that prevents her from going out and about. It is also a religious problem, and this is a religious society. Religion is taken very seriously. For a woman to have a flow of blood is to be declared unclean. There is a ritual that has to be undergone to be clean again. But imagine if you're having a flow of blood all the time. You can never be clean. And to touch someone unclean is to become unclean yourself and then have to undergo a ritual cleansing yourself. So this woman would have experienced not only a debilitating medical condition, but isolation from others and a loss of human touch. But what does she do with Jesus? She has the audacity not only to touch Jesus without asking, to touch Jesus, but to believe, you know, to believe that a little touch may be enough to heal her. Imagine the kind of faith you have to have. Faith not only that Jesus will be accepting of the touch of an unclean person, but that such a touch will heal. If Jesus is asking Jairus, the synagogue leader, to have faith, he has in this woman a dramatic witness of what such faith would look like. If you can believe like this, things can happen in your life you'd never imagine possible. And so it is. So it is. Jesus, we're told, feels energy leave his body. He knows someone has touched him in a special way. He asks his disciples, "Who touched me?" Well, they're surprised by the question. You're surrounded by a crowd. Any number of people may have touched you. No, Jesus says, no, this is different. And as he asks around, the woman comes forward. And Jesus then uses her example to say something to her on behalf of everyone there. "Don't think it's just me, daughter. Your faith has made you well." Now, this is important for Jairus to hear. At that very moment, it's critical for him to hear because upon entering his courtyard, people have come rushing out of his house. "Your daughter is dead. It's too late. Your daughter is dead." Before that, he was simply going to Jesus to ask for help. His daughter was sick and dying. Now she's actually dead. No, Jesus says, no. It's not too late. But what you need is that much more faith. "Jairus, do you believe? With all that you've been able to accomplish in your life, your position in life, where you've reached, your success, your achievements, What I'm asking you is to believe, even if it means believing the unbelievable. The girl is restored, and her restoration is so dramatic. It's a kind of resurrection from the dead. I mean, this story becomes important because after the disciple community have experienced Jesus as risen, they look back at this story as a kind of prelude to those who have eyes to see. Now, what does all this have to do with our modern contradiction? Is it true what our youth want to believe, that we can do and be all that we want to do and be if we believe in ourselves, or if we can believe in ourselves? Or is it true that we are severely determined by our genes, our biological chemical makeup, which means we can't do everything we want to do? Well, if we take this story as our way forward, we discern a way of wisdom more true than either claims of our modern contradiction. First of all, we all have limits. And if we haven't experienced any yet, it's only a matter of time. Death is that final limitation. But before we get to death, we will face all kinds of other limitations that will show us clearly how lacking in freedom we are. Yet, the gospel tells us that we also have choices. Even when all our choices have seemed to have come to an end, we can always believe, even if it means believing what seems impossible. There are always new things that can happen in our lives, new ways of seeing, of hearing, of tasting, of smelling, of perceiving, of connecting. There's always new doors that can open. Life is much larger and richer than we can ever imagine or know if we remain open, which is the posture of faith. And we only discover how rich and wide life is if we continue on a journey of faith, even in the face of limitations. If we trust in a presence and a power greater than us to take us by the hand, no limitation in this life, not even death, has to be the last word. We are always more free than we imagine, even in the face of harsh and difficult circumstances. At the same time, we need to learn, and we will learn, whether we like it or not, that faith in ourselves alone, it's idolatry. It's like faith in a drug or a pill or a therapy or a cause or a person. I mean, we need help and therapy, whether it's through a cause or through therapy or a person, we need help any way we can get it. We need help and healing through any resource or person we can get it. But to put our ultimate faith in anything less than God will always lead in the end to some kind of disappointment. And if we experience disappointment for too long, this can lead to disillusionment and cynicism too. And I'm sure you, like I, are surrounded by many who are disillusioned and cynical, and sometimes we ourselves get caught in that state of being ourselves for periods of time. Whoever we are, you know, as smart and beautiful, as strong and supported as we are, we will all make mistakes, and we will all experience failure and frustration and limitation. That's part of being human. Unless our faith is in some power greater than us and is being cultivated and renewed regularly, we can easily cave in, as many of us know. Learning how to trust God and follow the way of Christ and the way Christ has called us to journey, this is what will keep giving us new wings to fly again and again when life pushes us down. And so, do you have faith? Faith not in yourself alone, but in yourself as God can enable and empower you to be. That's a very different thing. It's faith in yourself, but only as God empowers and enables and calls you to be, just like the children's story. What are our dreams? How do they connect with God's dreams? All things are possible, even when the ground beneath us has crumbled and we are in the grip of frustration, disappointment, shame, and despair. All things are possible. But to access such possibility, we need a source of inspiration and energy well beyond us. Like Jairus, the synagogue leader, and like the woman, may we meet the God Jesus embodies, and to meet such a God deep within us, and may we find a glorious freedom to fly even when life's limits hit us hard.